President Rodrigo Duterte is set to highlight his fulfilled promises and priorities for his remaining months in office in his final State of the Nation address. Meanwhile, various groups critical of the Duterte administration holding rallies outside the Batasang Pamansa. We'll get live updates from our correspondents on the ground. The Okta Research Group sees early signs of another COVID-19 surge in some Metro Manila cities driven by the Delta variant. And in sports, Filipina Marjeline Didal battling in the finals of the Olympic skateboarding competition. I'm Ron Cruz, 8Line Philippines begins right now. For those of you watching us on YouTube and Facebook, glad you could join us. We're showing you live pictures now outside the Batasang Pamansa, where President Rodrigo Duterte is set to deliver his final State of the Nation address. Security site in and around the Batasang complex. Strict health protocols will be enforced due to the threat posed by COVID-19. Attendees are also required to undergo an RT-PCR test a day before the sauna and an antigen test today. Groups critical of the Duterte administration will be holding demonstrations along Commonwealth Avenue, where they will be met by thousands of policemen. Malacanang says the president's final sauna will highlight his administration's achievements, including the war on drugs, the completion of infrastructure projects, and the country's COVID-19 response. The president will also tackle his priorities for his remaining months in office. Anticipation is also high on whether the president will mention his possible run for the vice presidency in next year's elections. RG Cruz now joins us to tell us more about what's happening inside the Batasang Pamansa. Hi, RG.
Hi, Ron. Good afternoon. The session, the House of Representatives adjourned its session this morning about an hour ago to pave the way for the joint session this afternoon at around 4 o'clock. Guests are expected to be inside the session hall by 3 o'clock in preparation for the big speech at 4 o'clock. Now, during the morning session of the House of Representatives, Speaker Lord Alan Velasco listed the top priorities of the House as he opened the third and final regular session of the 18th Congress. These are the 2022 National Budget, the Retail Trade Liberalization Act, the Foreign Investments Act, and the Public Service Act. They are also looking at the taxation of Philippine offshore gaming operators and e-sabong betting activities. They're also looking to approve the medical stockpiling bill and the bills creating the Virology Institute of the Philippines and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. They're also looking at the ease of paying taxes bill and pension reform for military and uniformed personnel. They're also looking at more reforms to the country's tax code as well as other bills that are meant to help the government address the ongoing pandemic. Now, of course, during his speech, Speaker Velasco also paid tribute to his colleagues for the work that they put in during the time of the pandemic, especially highlighting the approval of the Bayanihan 3 and the resolution of both houses number 2 seeking to empower the present and future Congresses with authority to relax the economic restrictions in the 1987 Constitution. While these bills, however, are still pending at the Senate. Also in his speech, the speaker made a special shout out to the Philippine delegation to the ongoing Olympics in Japan. 298 lawmakers answered the roll call during the session, which more than satisfies the requirement for the declaration of a quorum to conduct business. Then the session then proceeded to act on the measures that are customarily preparatory to the holding of a joint session. These are the resolutions informing the Senate and the President that the House has entered into the exercise of its function. They also acted on a concurrent resolution which creates a joint committee of the Senate and the House to notify the President that Congress is ready to hear the speech. The sauna, as I mentioned earlier, is set for 4 p.m. today, with all guests physically attending the session expected to be seated in the session hall by 3 p.m. About 400 people are expected to participate in the sauna instead of the usual 1,450 under the special security and public health protocols, which consist of House members, senators, cabinet members, diplomats, and former government officials. The Batasang Pamansa complex, which is the venue of the big speech, is currently under strict lockdown, and those attending the sauna on Monday have been shortlisted. they have been given special identification cards and they are required to have negative RT-PCR and antigen tests. And of course, security inside and outside the Batasan Pabansa complex is strict, with only the state media broadcaster allowed inside. Of course, all private media, including us, will have to work off-site. That's the latest, Ron. Back to you.
RG Cruz with that story. Thanks, RG. The Philippines isn't any better and may even be worse off than where it was in 2016 when President Duterte first came into power. That's according to Dr. Edilberto De Jesus of the Ateneo School of Government, at least in terms of the fight against corruption, criminality and illegal drugs. De Jesus also says the Duterte administration lacks transparency.
Without transparency, the administration, the government, let's go of one of the most powerful instruments against corruption. We lack the information. We have not had any release of SALN since 2018 with the appointment of the new ombudsman. The president, who has declared himself as a champion against corruption, is putting himself at a disadvantage, and he can take the lead by providing his own SALNs to the public.
At least two Philippine lawmakers are confident Congress will still be able to churn out several economic measures in the final year of the Duterte administration. That's even as politicians start preparing for the upcoming 2022 elections.
The Foreign Investment Act is in the Senate in the second reading. The Public Services Act is getting a little longer in the Senate, but the retail trade, I think the impasse will be resolved. And the POGO, I think we might have the first law immediately after the SONA.
Aside from economic bill, Senator Sonny Angara says it's also important to pass laws that will strengthen health care facilities in the country to ensure a recovery from the pandemic.
But we also shouldn't forget yung genome sequencing, because right now we only have one, the genomes, Philippine Genome Center, doing it. We'd like to decentralize that going forward. So you have something maybe in the Visayas, have something in Mindanao, so you don't have to keep sending samples over samples and it's over time. And by the time the data gets there, it's no longer timely data.
For one journalist, the ABS-CBN shutdown should be seen as an election issue this 2022. John Neri, columnist at the Philippine Daily Inquirer, said a social weather station survey conducted in November 2020 shows 65% of Filipinos think it is dangerous to publish critical news about the Duterte administration. President Duterte had bragged about closing down ABS-CBN, which he says has been critical of his administration. The president's allies in Congress rejected the media giant's application for a fresh franchise last year.
But this is the single worst scandal because it, in one blow, affected millions of Filipinos. It's also the worst scandal for this administration because it presents the biggest danger to the ambition of the administration to continue its policies into the next administration. The threat to press freedom is not understood in terms of a collapse. It's like one day everything is gone. No, we should understand it. It should be understood as erosion, that press freedom is slowly being eroded, being undermined. And in the case of the non-granting of the franchise to ABS-CBN, it wasn't a slow erosion. It was a major upheaval. It seemed impossible until it became inevitable.
ABS-CBN is the parent firm of this news channel. Thousands of policemen have been deployed to prevent protesters from getting near the Batasan Pambansa. Rafi Santos now joins us with an update. Rafi?
Protesters and security forces have come to an agreement for the conditional rally permit issued by the Quezon City government that will allow protesters to hold programs ahead of the president's last State of the Nation address. Protesters are confined to the University of the Philippines, the CHR, and the NHA. No protests will be allowed along Commonwealth Avenue. The programs will only last till 11 a.m. The protesters have been allowed to march to Batasan after their program, but only until Tandang Sora Avenue. PNP Chief Guillermo Eleazar says the police will maintain maximum tolerance with protesters, but warned they will arrest or disperse protesters who will violate the agreed-upon terms on the conditional permit. The PNP has deployed 11,800 personnel to guard this year's zona and have tightened security around the Batasan complex. They have also implemented several rerouting schemes in the area. Back to you, Ron.
Rafi Santos with an update. Thanks, Rafi. Now, for House Speaker Lord Alan Velasco, 6 years is not enough for the Duterte administration. He says he's supporting Duterte's possible bid as vice president in the 2022 national elections so the chief executive could continue the measures undertaken during his term. Speaker Velasco is also supporting Duterte's daughter, Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio, if she runs for president.
I don't think naman nagarapal yan, Karen, mainly because it's still up to the voters whether they'll vote for a Duterte-Duterte tandem. So as to the dynasties, we've seen a lot of dynasties in each and every legislative district. I guess the political dynasty had its bad connotation, mainly because when we see dynasties before, in the past, nothing's been happening in the said districts.
Velasco is giving the Duterte administration a grade of 8 out of 10. He notes the Philippines' COVID-19 response isn't perfect, but he claims it's faring better than other countries. Healthcare workers slammed the Duterte administration ahead of the president's final sona. Filipino Nurses United claims the chief executive failed to fulfill his promises as they continue to be overworked and underpaid, despite being in the front lines of the country's fight against COVID-19. The group adds most of them have yet to receive their special allowances mandated under the Bayanihan 1 and 2 laws.
Hindi na po namin kaya no, sa private health workers yung mga nangyayari. At doon nga po sa Bayanihan Act 1 naiwan, yung Bayanihan 2, naluko po kami. Yung Bayanihan 3, kagaya sinasabi ni Pangulong doon kanina, hindi na naman po nakatuon sa aming mga health workers yung ayuda ng gobyerno. So kaya kami naniningil sa gobyerno, nasaan na nga ba ang mga benepisyo na ayuda ng gobyerno para sa mga health workers.
The Philippines now has over 100 known Delta COVID-19 variant cases. That's after the health department detected 55 additional cases of the highly transmissible strain. One of them has died, while the other 54 have been tagged as recovered. 37 of the new Delta cases were locally transmitted. 17 are returning overseas Filipinos. The DOH is still verifying if one carrier came from abroad. Of the new local cases reported, 14 are in Calabarzon, 8 in northern Mindanao, 2 in the Davao region, and 1 in the Ilocos region. Metro Manila and Central Luzon also logged 6 cases each. The government has since imposed stricter quarantine measures in areas where the Delta cases were found. It has also tightened border controls, adding Malaysia and Thailand to its pandemic travel ban list. The Philippines logged 5,479 COVID-19 cases Sunday. This brings a nationwide total to more than 1,548,000. Active infections stand at 54,262. According to ABS-CBN's data analytics team, COVID-19 testing fell below 50,000 for the sixth straight day, despite the presence of new and more infectious variants. Meanwhile, 93 more people died due to the disease, pushing the death toll past 27,200. A dire warning from experts. The Octa Research Group says several cities in Metro Manila are showing early signs of a COVID-19 surge due to the Delta variant. These cities include Valenzuela, Caloocan, Makati, and Manila.
Definitely may early signs ng surge. In fact, nakita natin nag-i-increase na in many LGUs in the NCR. In fact, mataas na yung reproduction number na tinatawag na in some LGUs. For example, sa Valenzuela, ito yung pinakamataas na reproduction number na nakikita natin sa NCR.
The group adds there are also spikes in COVID-19 cases in several areas in the Visayas and Mindanao, including Cagayan de Oro City, Cebu City, and Lapu-Lapu City. But it says strict implementation of health protocols can help stop COVID-19 cases from rising. The provincial government of Laguna is scrambling to contain a possible outbreak of the Delta variant. 17 of the country's 119 Delta variant cases have been traced to the province. The provincial health office says contact tracing is still ongoing.
Malawakan o ang gagawin na contact trace. Kung isipin po natin, ito po ay mga recovered na kasi itong mga pasyenteng ito. Kaya yung iba ho ay June pa nagkasakit
na.
O na hospital o early July. Kaya mga recovered na sila. Ngayon nagbabacktrack ho kami hanggang dun sa mga na-contact trace, yung mga close contact nila. Binabalikan ho natin. Sa ngayon, lahat ng mga contact trace ay i-isolate pa rin ho natin.
4 out of the 5 Delta van infections found in Cagayan de Oro traced to a birthday party. Mayor Oscar Moreno said the 4 patients are family members who got infected during a birthday celebration last month.
Nung nangyari yung infection nila, may contact tracing na, pero nung lumabas yung report na Delta variant, we redid the contact tracing. And doon nga nakita ko yung report nung towards the end of June na merong birthday party, birthday nung index case po, Kabayan, no? And yung Father's Day, they also celebrated. Kaya 4 sa kanyang pamilya tinamaan.
Mayor Moreno also said the city's healthcare utilization rate remains high as it caters to severe and critical patients in the entire region.
Ang main COVID referral hospital ng Region 10 is here in Cagayan de Oro. So, pati mga private hospitals, the biggest in the region, are also here in Cagayan de Oro. Kahapon, I monitored the hospital system sa city and may report na kung natanggap na medyo dumadami ang nasa triaging.
Indonesia extends COVID-19 restrictions for another week to try to curb infections. The country has become Asia's coronavirus epicenter, with hospitals overwhelmed by the number of cases, particularly on the densely populated islands of Java and Bali. Last week, Indonesia reported record-high deaths on 4 separate days, bringing its cumulative death toll to more than 83,000. Total infections have climbed to over 3.1 million. But health experts say both deaths and case numbers have been undercounted. With vaccine hesitancy still high in some parts of the U.S., a couple in Arkansas got a grim wake-up call to get vaccinated as soon as possible. Here's their story.
Amid a nationwide rollout of COVID-19 vaccines, large swaths of the U.S. population have delayed or resisted getting shots, and some Americans have since come to regret holding off.
We just thought we were young and pretty healthy, and if we did get it, it wouldn't be too bad, so it was.
Just outside Little Rock, Arkansas, Tate Izai and his wife Christine were expecting their 6th child last May when both fell ill with serious COVID-19 symptoms. At the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences Hospital in Little Rock, Christine was put on a ventilator and then on extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO, a machine that pumps blood outside a patient's body to an artificial heart and lungs. Izai said at some point Christine lost the pregnancy.
We just know the baby was stillborn. So that all we know is the oxygen just dropped too low at some point.
Meanwhile, Tate started experiencing his own symptoms of COVID-19 and said he spent 8 or 9 days in the hospital.
And I told him, I said, any kind of treatment you can give me, any experimental treatments, whatever, you got to get me better. So, because I already knew she wasn't doing very well at the time.
Hospital CEO Stephen Meddy told Reuters too many Arkansans delayed getting vaccinated for various reasons. Unfortunately, he said it often takes a hospital visit to change minds.
There's considerable resistance to getting the vaccine in the public. And I have to say that
all the patients who are hospitalized here upon recovery, if they have not been vaccinated, tell us that they indeed have changed their mind and would get vaccinated once they are discharged.
Of course, not everyone comes around. Brian Parisi spent more than a week in the ICU at Providence St. Joseph in Orange, California, battling the novel coronavirus. The unvaccinated 53-year-old told Reuters he's not sure the vaccine would have helped.
In retrospect, I honestly don't know if it would have made a difference because there are adverse reactions that can come from the vaccine.
Critical care pulmonologist Dr. Juby Babu disagrees.
It's quite obvious that people who are vaccinated are not getting symptomatic disease and much less likely so to get admitted with COVID.
After spending most of May and June in the hospital, Christine Izai is still weak but improving daily. Tate Izai said he now has a message for his fellow Arkansans about the vaccines.
I want people to be able to make their own choice, of course, but I do want to just tell my story because it could happen to me, it could happen to anybody.
Over in Tunisia, hundreds took to the streets of the capital and other major cities to protest the spikes in COVID-19 cases that have aggravated the already troubled economy. This report.
Police and protesters clashed in cities across Tunisia on Sunday as demonstrators demanded the government step down and attacked offices of ENNAHDA, the moderate Islamist party that is the biggest in parliament. A spike in infections has aggravated economic troubles and exposed the failings of a squabbling political class. The protests, the biggest in Tunisia for months and the biggest to target ENNAHDA for years, were called by social media activists. No political parties publicly backed the rallies. In Tunis, police used pepper spray against protesters, who threw stones and shouted slogans demanding that Prime Minister Hichem Mechichi quit and Parliament be dissolved. The pandemic has hammered the economy, which was already struggling in the aftermath of the 2011 revolution that ousted longtime authoritarian leader Zine El Abidine Ben Ali. As a young man in 2011, this man says, I called for jobs, freedom and national dignity. 10 years on, he says he's still calling for the same things. Public support for democracy has waned amid surging unemployment and crumbling state services. The protests raise pressure on a fragile government that is enmeshed in a political struggle with President Kais Saied and trying to avert a looming fiscal crisis.
Up next, several areas in the Philippines remain flooded due to the effects of monsoon rains. 8Line Philippines will be right back. Stay with us. We're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at the headlines. President Duterte is set to highlight his fulfilled promises and priorities for his remaining months in office in his final State of the Nation address. Meanwhile, various groups critical of the Duterte administration holding rallies outside the Batasang Pambansa. We'll get live updates from our correspondents on the ground. The Okta Research Group sees early signs of another COVID-19 surge in some Metro Manila cities driven by the Delta variant. And in sports, Filipina Marjorie Didal battling in the finals of the Olympic skateboarding competition. Several rights groups want President Duterte held accountable for alleged state-sponsored killings as well as a crackdown on activists. We now have Mike Navalio on the line for more. Mike.
Hi, Ron. 5 years of no justice, no peace, only state terror and criminal negligence. That has led to a full-blown human rights crisis and democratic backsliding. This, according to rights group Alliance Karapatan, is the legacy of the Duterte administration as the president makes his fifth and final State of the Nation address this afternoon. Karapatan said in a statement, none of Duterte's so-called achievements can overshadow thousands killed in anti-drug campaign and counterinsurgency program. More than 6,000 drug suspects have been killed under the drug war, based on official figures, but human rights groups estimate there could be as many as 30,000 killed since 2016. But aside from this, Karapatan said 414 have allegedly been extrajudicially killed because of anti-insurgency efforts of the government, aside from more than 1,000 illegal arrests and detention. Among those killed were 61 women rights defenders like Zara Alvarez, Ana Marie Chay Evangelista, and Eugenia Magpantay. That's why women's rights defenders from Tanggol Bayi have called for a stop to the killings, saying they weep for the mothers, sisters, and daughters of the victims of Duterte's bloody war on drugs. The Integrated Bar of the Philippines, meanwhile, said 63 lawyers have been killed under this administration. The latest are the killings of Deputy City Prosecutor Victor Begtang Jr. on June 23, 2021, inside his house in Apayao, and the killing of attorney Siti Gilda Mahinay Sapi in Davao City on July 14. The IDP said in a statement it grieves and is appalled by the increasing and sheer number of assassinations of lawyers, judges, and prosecutors with impunity. In stark contrast, it pointed out that the number of lawyers killed during the previous administrations, stretching way back to 1972, was less than 10 for each administration. Former Marshal of Victims under CELDA have likened the Duterte administration to former dictator Ferdinand Marcos's martial law, calling it an ill copy and a haunting reminder of why martial law did not work. Among the similarities, it pointed out human rights violations are brazenly committed by state forces, critics and dissenters are harassed, illegally arrested or shot in broad daylight, fake news and black propaganda rampant, strengthened control over the country by imposing illogical lockdowns and military schemes, control of the press through ABS-CBN shutdown, and legalizing a witch hunt against critics by passing the Anti-Terrorism Act. Kapatid, a group of supporters of political prisoners, warned of more violations and arrests under the anti-terror law, noting there are now 715 political prisoners in the country, the highest in 35 years. Zelda also questioned the Duterte government's borrowing of millions of dollars without knowing where the funds went, just like during Marcos's regime. Meanwhile, Anakpaw has criticized the Duterte administration for allegedly abandoning the poor during the pandemic and the Duterte family for its supposed ambition to keep a tight hold of power and influence in allegedly pushing for their political dynasty. Migrants in the Middle East also slammed the president for allegedly abandoning overseas Filipino workers during the pandemic by slowly repatriating OFWs who want to return home and refusing to provide financial assistance. Ecumenical Christian Youth Group Student Christian Movement of the Philippines hit the Duterte administration for allegedly railroading various policies, such as the Create and Train laws, as well as the Rice Tarification Law. The various progressive groups called for an end to Duterte's reign of terror and echoed calls to hold Duterte accountable for supposed crimes against the Filipino people. The National Union of People's Lawyers, meanwhile, said the case of the International Criminal Court against the president's drug war continued to move, and for the 5 years spent weaponizing the law against the opposition, and UPL said Duterte faces an aegis of human rights lawyers more committed than ever to the tenets of democracy. Ron?
Mike Navalio with that report. Thanks, Mike. Now, our correspondent George Carino is covering the demonstration being held by Duterte critics along Commonwealth Avenue, who now joins us live for an update. Go ahead, George.
Hi, Ron. The militant group's protest is now on a halt outside the gate of UP here in Commonwealth Avenue, just facing Central Avenue, because the police blocked the march while they en route towards the corner of Tandangsora. I was told here by that the group is intending to march towards Tandangsora and eventually retreat back to the University of the Philippines in University Avenue before peaceful dispersal. But upon reaching this point, Renato Reyes exclaimed, "Hindi ito ang napag-usapan namin. Doon yung kami pinapadaan. Hindi kami kakasya doon." Renato Reyes was referring to the bus lane here in the Commonwealth Avenue. It is the outermost lane, and I agreed with him that the size of the mob is not proportional to the lane. It was a one-lane alley that was allotted by the police for the protesters to use. General Antonio Yara was here a while ago and having a conversation with Renato Reyes and the group. We will try to approach so that we can hear what Renato Reyes was trying to say before the group. Excuse me. Here is Renato Reyes. Nato, ano nangyari?
Nangyari, hindi sila tumutupad sa usapan.
Hanggang saan na lang ang protesta nyo?
Gusto nila kaming pagkasyahin dito sa napaka-ikli, napaka-liit, napaka-sikip na daanan. Obviously, hindi kami kakasya dyan. Anong purpose nito? Padaanin nyo na lang yung mga tao. We go to the destination, we finish, we go home. That is the agreement. This is not the agreement. Hindi ito ang pinagkaisahan, hindi ito pang kinagkasunduan. Kaya tayo nandito at tumatagal dahil po yung mga pulis, ayaw tayong padaanin, naglagay ng panibagong harang na wala naman sa usapan. Wala tayong usapang may orange barrier dito at kukontrolin niyo yung lane. Walang ganyang usapan.
That's Renato Reyes, the Secretary General of Bagong Alyansa Makabayan. I'm trying to locate General Antonio Yara, who is the director of Quezon City Police District. He can probably provide an explanation on the complaints being articulated by Renato Reyes. And I have yet to see him, although a while ago I saw General Yara walking and talking to other police officials in uniform. Right now, he's not within speaking distance from the camera. I still have to reach General Yara for the explanation on the sentiments echoed earlier by Renato Reyes, the Secretary General of Bagong Alyansa ng Makabayan. Ron?
George Carino giving us what's happening along Commonwealth Avenue. Thank you very much, George. George, earlier talking to Renato Reyes, the Secretary General of Bayan. George was reporting that protesters are now massing up along Commonwealth Avenue as they are blocked by police. As we mentioned, Renato Reyes, Secretary General of Bayan, one of the groups heading the demonstrations, is claiming that police did not abide by an earlier agreement on where they could pass to continue their demonstration. We'll continue to get updates from George Carino about what's happening there later on in our succeeding newscasts. Meanwhile, more news. The Philippines' police chief vows there will be no arrests of protesters during President Duterte's State of the Nation address. Lieutenant General Guillermo Elizar says police will only disperse those who violate minimum health protocols.
Mismong itong mga grupo na magkikilos protesta ang nagbigay ng kondisyon nila sa ating LGU kung kahit sila pinayagan. At kasama doon, ayun nga, yung siguradong pag-maintain ng mga physical distancing, pagsuot ng mga ng face mask and face shield, and hindi rin pwede mga bata, at kung meron mamatanda ay bakunado na. So all of these things na kanilang inihatag ngayon, yun na naging basehan ng ating LGU para payagan o biglansya ng permit.
Traffic authorities have implemented rerouting schemes in Manila ahead of the President's honor later today. Zian Ambrosio filed this report.
The Philippine National Police, especially the Quezon City Police District, has beefed up its security in preparation for the State of the Nation address of President Duterte. As early as 3 a.m., several policemen were outside the Batasan Police Station. 15,000 policemen from all across the metro will be deployed for today's SONA. 8,000 will be assigned in the main areas. 1,100 are for the Special Task Group for Peace and Order. 2,532 for the Special Task Group on Security. 827 for the Emergency Preparedness and Response. And more than 4,000 will be from the Augmentation and Reserve Team. Policemen assigned at the Civil Disturbance Management Unit tasked to handle rallies were all reminded that they should be unarmed and must practice maximum tolerance. All the police units are already positioned in various parts of Commonwealth and the Batasan Complex. This is to ensure safety as the President delivers his final SONA. Last weekend, rally organizers have met with the local government of Quezon City and officials of the Quezon City Police District. They have agreed to keep the protests peaceful and in accordance with minimum health protocols. Meantime, certain roads will also be closed to traffic, including the IBP Road, which has been closed since 6 a.m. Portions of Commonwealth Avenue will also be closed, and motorists are advised to take alternate routes. Those going to Fairview may use North Avenue, going to Mindanao Avenue, and Visayas Avenue, leading to Congressional Avenue and the respective destinations. Meantime, a few minutes ago, we saw a priest blessing the policemen here along Commonwealth Avenue. He prays that everything will be in order, it will be in peace and order. And that's the latest here in Commonwealth Avenue.
In other news, the town of Masantol in Pampanga is placed under a state of calamity due to heavy flooding caused by the monsoon rains. 26 villages in Masantol are submerged, prompting the evacuation of at least 178 families. In Oriental Mindoro, authorities are assessing whether to put the town of Baco under a state of calamity. The floods there affected some 800 families, while damaging millions of pesos worth of crops. 200 families living in coastal areas were evacuated in Cavite as well, after their homes were destroyed. Meanwhile, the alert level over Marikina River has been lifted, but COVID-19 vaccinations have been suspended for 2 days because of the flooding. Jab appointments for Monday and Tuesday will resume on Saturday. The southwest monsoon brings more rains over northern Luzon. Let's get the latest on the weather from Pagasa forecaster Chris Perez. Hi, Chris.
Good afternoon, Ron. Yes, so far the Habagat or the southwest monsoon will continue to bring moderate to occasionally heavy rains over the Ilocos region, Zambales, and Bataan. Residents of these areas are advised to be alert against possible flash floods and landslides. Meanwhile, cloudy skies and scattered rain showers and thunderstorms will prevail over Metro Manila, portions of central and southern Luzon, including the Occidental Mindoro area, while the rest of the country will have generally partly cloudy to cloudy skies with isolated rain showers or thunderstorms. Now, because of the Habagat, we have gale warning hoisted over the northern and western seaboards of Luzon. Fisher folks and other small sea crabs are not advised to venture out over these particular areas. So far, we are not expecting any tropical cyclones to affect the country within the next 2 to 3 days. And that's the latest here at Pagasa Weather Forecasting Center. I'm Chris Perez reporting for ANC.
Thanks for the forecast, Chris. Bad weather triggers higher vegetable prices across markets in Metro Manila. Prices of vegetables coming from Benguet have risen up to 40 pesos per kilo. But the Agriculture Department assures the public measures are in place to ensure enough supply of vegetables despite the damaged crops. A Belgian town begins to clean up after the heaviest flood in decades swamped streets and swept cars and other structures. Take a look.
The town of Dinan in Belgium woke up to a big cleanup job on Sunday. After the heaviest floods in decades on Saturday turned streets into torrential streams that washed away cars and pavements. No one was killed, but authorities predict the cost of the damage will be significant. Local resident Pierre Collot described the deluge.
In less than 20 minutes, the water gushed down from here above. Then it gradually grew larger. It became a torrent which took all the cars away gradually, and everything was piled up there in the back. Then it went into the garages, so everything has to be rebuilt.
The flash floods followed a two-hour thunderstorm, which left streets strewn with rubble, wrecked cars, and thick mud. Dinan was spared the deadly floods 10 days ago that killed 37 people in southeast Belgium and many more in Germany. But the violence of Saturday's storm surprised many.
Over in the U.S., residents who evacuated as the bootleg fire burns returned to their town only to find their homes gone, their possessions destroyed. Here's a full story.
I mean, there's nothing left.
The bootleg fire, one of more than 80 active wildfires that have charred about 1.3 million acres in recent weeks, has ravaged the southern Oregon community of Sicken Estates, leaving behind a trail of ash-covered debris. Residents like Gage Clark, who evacuated ahead of the wildfire, returned to their community only to find their homes and businesses gone, their possessions destroyed.
I thought I still had my sawmill shop and possibly this shop. Mm-hmm. So I came back thinking that I still had something to come home to, and when I got here, I was actually kind of gut shot, you know? It was knots in the stomach, and, I mean, nothing left.
Local news reports said the fire had decimated 112 homes and 169 outbuildings. The bootleg fire is Oregon's third largest wildfire on records dating back to 1900. Located about 250 miles south of Portland, the fire had ripped through more than 400,000 acres of drought-parched brush and timber as of Friday, destroying at least 67 homes near the California border. At its peak, an estimated 2,000 people were displaced by evacuations.
We just got to try to band together as a community and rebuild and get people's, you know, lives back in order. Is, I mean, it'll never be back to what it was, of course, but we got to try to do what we can because we all still own our property and a lot of people don't have anywhere else to go.
Still ahead, Filipino skateboarder Marjolyn Didal advances to the finals of the Tokyo Olympics. More news on the Summer Games when Dateline Philippines returns. In business now, an advisor of President Duterte eyes restrictions for unvaccinated people. Presidential Advisor for Entrepreneurship Joey Concepcion says lessening the mobility of the unvaccinated could help check the spread of the Delta variant and at the same time help the economy recover. Proposed curbs could include restricting unvaccinated people from entering certain establishments, eating out, or traveling around the country. Concepcion says these can be done instead of a harder and more widespread lockdown. That's as he stresses the fourth quarter is a make-or-break period for the Philippine economy as it tries to recover from its 9.6% slump last year. Some good news for motorists. Local pump prices finally headed lower after 8 straight weeks of increases. Starting tomorrow, a liter of gas will be 75 centavos cheaper per liter. Both diesel and kerosene prices will also be 60 centavos lower per liter. This comes amid weakening global demand for oil commodities as the Delta variant halts travel once again. In sports, Filipina skateboarder Marjolyn Didal falls short on her quest for a podium finish at the Tokyo Olympics. Didal reached the finals after getting a score of 12.02 in the preliminary round. However, Didal could only muster a score of 7.52 in the medal round, finishing 7th overall. Japan's Momiji Nishiya bagged the gold. This is the first time skateboarding has been included in the Summer Games. Also today, Filipino boxer Carlo Paalam reached a round of 16 in the men's flyweight division. Paalam scored a split decision win against Irishman Brendan Irvin. In basketball, France handed Team USA a shocking defeat. The Frenchmen rallied in the final minutes for an 83-76 victory. It's the American team's first loss since 2004. NBA veteran Evan Fournier led France's comeback with 28 points. Team USA is now in a precarious position of having to win their last two games to advance to the medal round. Face masks are mandatory across all Olympic venues in Tokyo as part of measures to combat the spread of COVID-19. But as this report tells us, a new rule lets medalists briefly flaunt their smiles on the podium.
Olympic medalists are now allowed to remove their masks on the podium for a 30-second socially distanced photo op. That's the new rule from the International Olympic Committee, but it confirmed on Sunday that masks are otherwise mandatory across all Tokyo Games venues at all times, including medal ceremonies, for staff, athletes and media. Spectators have mostly been absent from the Games. This was IOC spokesman Mark Adams.
And, you know, it's not a nice to have, it's a must have. It's important both for the sports, and for everyone involved, and of course for our Japanese partners and friends particularly also.
During Sunday morning's swimming finals, American Chase Carlisle took off his mask on the winner's podium after his gold medal performance in the men's 400 metres medley. He was standing next to maskless compatriot and silver medalist Jay Litherland and Australian Brendan Smith, who took the bronze and also removed his mask. The IOC confirmed the swimmers were abiding by the changed rules.
And before we go, stay tuned for our wall-to-wall coverage of President Rodrigo Duterte's sixth and final State of the Nation address. That's from 3 in the afternoon up to 6:30 in the evening. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ron Cruz. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, everyone, as you keep it here on the news channel.